Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
In the first half, we get an update from an actual newsman, Steve Gregory, and he'll keep us abreast of all that's going on in real time and the coronavirus thing. And then the news is in the first half, and then we're doing a long form with Larry the Cable Guy in the second half. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Beware of fake products, phony stock deals, fabricated emails, texts, and social media posts playing off the coronavirus and fears, trying to steal your money, trying to steal your personal information. Scammers could ask for donations for potential victims. So you feel bad, you want to donate, they play on that, they take your money. Drew said the ultimate work-at-home people were the identity thieves. They pioneered this whole work-at-home business. They're at home trying to rip you off, especially during tax season when so much private info is out there and being exchanged. Good thing there's a LifeLock, which detects a wide range of identity threats, like your Social Security number, for sale on the dark web. Protect yourself with LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
Knowing to prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off in your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam. That's promo code Adam at LifeLock.com for up to 25% off. From Adam's house and Gina's house and Brian's house, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Larry the Cable Guy. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, iHeart Media correspondent Stephen Gregory drops by, and Dave Damashek is here for good sports. And now, earlier today, Natalia shouted at him, "Val, stay home." Adam Carolla.
That's why you have to listen to all the shows. Yeah, get it on. Got to get on the shows. Get on, and get on. And thanks for tuning in and sharing your these very interesting times. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Don't care.
You know, it's funny. I'm looking forward to talking to Steve Gregory from KFI News, because I've been asking for a long time, well, what about ages and what about information and what about stuff and why aren't we getting this? Are we missing, and is it a nefarious plan, or are they not being able to get the ages of people and other information? He's a bona fide news guy, works with Gina over at KFI out here in Los Angeles, and we'll get him on the phone. Now, one of my favorite...
I have a feeling you'll find the answers very satisfying. He definitely has answers.
I'm looking for that. The part that I'm not finding satisfying is we keep saying, Steve... Now, so he doesn't go by Steven. He goes by Steve.
Steve.
Right, which is what is one of his big cult is when he leaves.
His lockout.
His lockout. Is that called a lockout?
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
Steve Gregory,
awesome.
KFI News.
Right, right. But he never says Stephen Gregory.
No.
So we keep calling him Stephen Gregory over here, but I'm going with Steve Gregory
because
that's what he says, and that's his lockout. I don't have his thing in my pile, but we'll see if we can get that to Sonny and correct that. It's a little catch as catch can here, which is we email stuff to Sonny. Sonny prints it out, and then Sonny brings it to me. But I don't have Steve's bio, but Gina knows enough.
I know enough. Also, just to highlight, just because I know you don't have it in front of you, he has crazy stories. He's the one that will go out completely by himself in a flak jacket. You know, he's done stuff with, for drug cartel stories on the border. He's been attacked at protests in St. Louis. He's really, he's out there.
Well, I want to talk to him about all of it and many questions about how the news and the reporting works.
Sure.
First, I will tell you that I was just talking to Dr. Drew, who's...
in hiding.
He's in hiding.
Cowering.
You know, a lot of guys are in semi-seclusion. He's in full seclusion. You don't hear about the full, but he's full seclusion. And he was saying to me, what's going on with people and their ability to misread intent? And I thought to myself, this is a subject I'm very interested in. And then I said to him, I will give you two extreme examples in my reaction as it pertains to intent. I went in the shop while we're on the break, and there was a lone coffee mug sitting 4 inches from the sink. It was the one that said dad on it. I should send Max a pat of the I tweeted the pictures out there. It said dad on it, ironically. It was about four inches from the sink. And at the bottom of it was some spot welded coffee stains that could not. Okay. And by the way, the thing is so deep that good luck getting your hand down there and cleaning it off. But I thought 11 years of begging people to rinse their coffee mugs, and it has not worked at all. And
So far.
The jury's still out. I was rip shit pissed. I could not fucking believe that the people I employ cannot execute the simplest of, I don't know what to call it, decrees, pronouncements. I'm now down to begging, but they can't do it or they won't do it. And I was like, fuck, I'm so fucking wildly upset over our inability 11 years in to rinse a coffee mug. Now, the number one answer, which always gets me even more angry, is when I say to Chris Maxpata, hey, what about that coffee mug? And then he goes, it's not my coffee mug. And I go, I understand, but you walk past it 9 times. You
stop. I never do that. Stop.
You always do it. That's all you did. That's all you do. That's all anyone in that place does. It goes, I'm not. Oh, well, it took 3 years to beat that out of them, which is throw it in the sink. Throw it in the sink and put water in it. No, number one answer, that's not my coffee mug. That's the number one answer. At some point, I then decree that you can put it underwater anyway. But
what?
That's where we're at. Now, I am so upset over this, I cannot put it into words. But the day I came home and my assistant Jay had mangled my Lamborghini Miura, I was not upset one iota. Why? Well,
because he didn't mean to.
That's right. Intent. One is this guy made a mistake that he wishes never happened. The other is I can't get people whose salaries I pay to put water in a mug. Okay. So it's all about intent. It's not about the result. It's about the intent. So Drew is sitting around and he's wrestling with the notion of, I am a good person. I'm a doctor. I've dedicated myself to people. He does so much pro bono work and blah, blah, blah. Why can't people understand what I'm trying to do? Even if the result was negative, why don't they understand that why kill a person who was trying to do something and was misguided or misinformed or misled or made bad decisions versus somebody who's actually a bad person? Why do we need to put that person's head on a pike?
Yes.
They're trying to do something and they screwed up.
Those distinctions should be made.
Those distinctions should be made. And then it led me into a thought, which is there's a lot of cross-pollinization here, which is, I was talking to someone yesterday and they said to me, you give out a lot of unsolicited advice, don't you? And I said, I do. And they said, why? And I said, well, I've been talking about how to paint ever since I learned how to paint. One of the first jobs I had was painting commercial interiors of commercial office buildings with a guy named Andy, who was a Jehovah's Witness. And one of the first things I'd learned, because I'd been seeing commercials my entire life and experimenting my entire life with this, is paint trays are never used by professional painters. Anyone who knows how to paint at any level never uses the paint tray. You see them in the Home Depot commercials. You see them in the sitcoms when they're painting the nursery. Mm-hmm. They have the paint tray. But think about the paint tray. The paint tray is a tray. It's about 3 inches deep on the deep side. You have to put a quart of paint in it, not too much, because when you take the roller and you roll it, you'll push the paint out the other side. And anyone who's ever tried to move a paint tray, it is, you're on a teetering ship and you're on roller skates. Like it slops around. It's really hard,
it's cumbersome, man,
to transport it without spilling the paint and so on and so forth. The very first thing I learned, use a 5-gallon bucket, put a screen, hang a screen in a bucket. They have paint screens. You hang it in the bucket. Then you get the roller and you go, well, I'm 6'2". I can do the roller. I can roll all the way up and down the wall. No, you're bending all the way down to the ground and you're getting up on your tiptoes. Get a 6-foot extension. Get a 6-foot extension, put it in the roller, put the roller in the bucket, put 2 gallons of paint in the bucket, put it in, pull it out, roll it on the screen, then roll it on the wall from a distance. It's much easier on your back to go all the way up and all the way down. And then when you store it, put a little slosh of water in the bucket with the paint. It's water soluble now. Put some Saran wrap over it and just put the leave the whole thing in the bucket. Walk away tomorrow. You can pick up where you left off. It's so much better than the paint tray. And so I told this person, if I was walking through like a mini mall and I saw somebody painting with a tray in their business, they're opening a nail salon or something, I would poke my head in and go, hey, you should use a bucket. And I said, that's what I do. That's what I've been doing my whole life. And that's what I've been receiving my whole life. The only reason I know how to paint with a bucket is because some Jehovah's Witness named Andy said, hey, don't use the tray, use the bucket. And I went, bingo, that makes sense to me. And then I thought, whether it was playing football or whether it was painting or whether it was swinging a hammer or whatever it was, it was always somebody telling you. I'd never read a book on construction painting. It was a guy named Rick who was 11 years older than me, and he was going to show me how to do a coping joint and why my 90-degree joint on the baseboard was okay, but his coping joint was better, and I should do it that way. And then he explained, proceeded to show me what a coping joint was and how you get a coping saw out and do it. And I thought to myself, thank you, Rick. Thanks for taking time. Thanks for making me a better carpenter.
Yeah. To your point, just to kind of broaden it a little bit, working in a newsroom and something that I specifically have never done before, Steve or somebody will say, ooh, I have a suggestion. Do this, don't do this. And I'll say, great, thanks. And that's definitely something it has been crystallized through this job. Instead of, well, but I was doing it this way because nobody cares. They're giving you a piece of advice. Take it. And somebody said to me, you know, you're really good at taking advice and taking criticism. And I said, because when I hear your suggestion, I don't hear criticism. Mm-hmm. I hear, here's a way to keep your job. Would you like a hint?
Or to make your life
easier.
So
it's a huge plus for somebody to bestow that gift on me, how to keep my job.
Yeah. Oh, look, they're stopping and taking time. I mean, I don't know. Do you give tips or share knowledge with hobos? And the answer is no. You do it with your kids. You do it with your friends. You do it with people you care about. So why then do half the people you care about look at it as a full frontal assault? So I then went from football. That's just a bunch of guys telling you what to do, technique, what you're doing wrong and how you need to fix it, which I always took as concern. Like, hey, these coaches and Pop Warner, these old guys with their beards and windbreakers, they're volunteering. They're not even getting paid. They must care, was the way I looked at it. Then you get out of that and you get into carpentry. Carpentry, you walk on a construction site, you know nothing about carpentry and eventually become a journeyman carpenter because you listen to Tom Johnson, who was telling you how to do laminate from his shop in Chatsworth. And I appreciated that Tom was doing that. Yeah. Also, we're going to get him on the, we're going to get Tom on soon. This guy worked closely
on Adam History Month.
That's right. So Max Pat, I think, has found a connection to Tom, but he'll share some stories. And then later on, I'm on the stage at the Groundlings and Cynthia Seghetti's sitting in the middle of the bleachers holding court. And she goes, you know, make an entrance. And then I make an entrance with my hands in my pocket and she yells, stop. What did you bring to the party? You don't walk in empty handed. You got something in your hands. You got some work, some space work. What are you doing? And I go, oh, okay. And then I re-enter. And now I'm holding a salad bowl in my mind. And I go, hey, what are you doing? And she yells, stop. No questions. You know what he's doing. Go out, come back again. And I don't go, hey, lady, you're not the boss of me. I go, she's being pretty short and curt and tough. But I think she wants me to get better at improv. And that's the way I shall absorb it.
And the construct is you're paying her to give you the advice. Like, you'd be a fool, so many people are, to not take that advice.
Well, most of this transcends all logic. But what I'm saying is Drew's subject of intent and or unsolicited advice. What is the intent of unsolicited advice? And I think a lot of people do because you think you're smarter than me. And
it's like, they take it as a referendum on their abilities as a human being or something.
Which, here's the whole thing. I don't know how insecure you must be to take a look at every tie this sheep shank knot this way or use a 5-gallon bucket to put paint or, hey, when you're cooking – use olive oil instead of margarine. It's healthier. Whatever. Why is everything a referendum on your parenting or your ability or your
relationship? Like you're somehow above me or something. It's
yes. Harsh. Let's stop that. And you're allowed to critique Dr. Drew for being wrong in his estimates as it pertains to the virus. But I don't think you're allowed to ascribe evil, nefarious, motivations to what he was doing. Let's please stop it there. It doesn't make sense.
Or anybody. Undermine his credentials as a doctor. Oh, he's just a quack. Is he even a real doctor? Yes.
Right.
He's a real doctor.
He's the love doctor.
That's right.
All right. Steve Gregory, KFI is on. I'm so in love. What do we call it? Not an outro. It's a...
The lockout.
Lockout. Is Steve Gregory there from KFI? Sorry, Max Pena?
Yeah.
All right, we'll get him pumped up. He'll give us all the official particulars on what's going on in this crazy, crazy land we're living in.
There he is.
Steve? Oh, I don't see
He's
him now.
He's getting set up. Here we go.
He came on and he popped off. Colleague now. Hi, Steve.
Adam, how are you, sir?
I'm well. I'm a fan of your work.
Well, that's very kind of you. Same to you.
Are you at KFI as we speak?
Yes, I just got off the county's latest updates and figures and numbers and stuff, so I've been monitoring that.
Well, where are we at in L.A. County so far?
Well, L.A. County, number of deaths, sadly, up to 169. Looks like right now in the county we have 6,910 positive cases.
Okay.
And for the first time today, we got ethnicity breakdown.
Oh.
Oh.
Very, good, it's very interesting.
I'm looking to blame Pacific Islander, Indonesian specifically, but go ahead.
Now, they were able to provide information for 93 of those who have passed away thus far because the information is coming in from various sources. They're coming in from different labs, and I've just found out that the private labs are not taking any kind of ethnic information, so it's very hard to get a complete picture, but of the 93 deaths that they do have information for, 19% of them are Asian, 17% African-American, 28% Latinx, 27% white, and 9% as classified as other ethnicity.
That's so, my goal. My goal is to get to other. Mm-hmm. I know.
We're all headed there.
I have an X on my license when it wants to know if I'm male or female, so I'm kind of other in that group. But if I could get to the ethnicity as being other, I think I could run the table on this. So, Steve,
that's disproportionately Hispanic, by the way, 28%. That's
well,
higher
here's
than
don't be fooled by that because based on the population breakdown of ethnicity, actually the deaths are higher in the African-American community.
Yeah. They're always way ahead.
Interesting.
Because what it is you go, wait, you go 42 or 27% Hispanic, 21% African-American, but you realize LA's half Hispanic and 11% African-American, and that's where the rub is. Mm-hmm. So I was complaining, lamenting, and shouting foul at not getting any ages of the deceased people. I kept getting this over 60 or over 65. And to me, while this isn't pertinent normally in this particular case, this is really pertinent information because I was getting over 60. Now, Dr. Drew is over 60 and Mark Garagos are over 60 and they're good, dear friends. And I talk to them on a daily basis. And it's scary to think that Mark Garagos is in danger. Both my parents are in their deep 80s, and I have no real regard for their safety. So it's a completely different story. I could lose a non-family member who I cherish versus some leech. He was 88 and a half and wanting a new trumpet in my dad. So to me, I was like, why aren't we getting the ages of these people that are dying versus the over 60? A lot of people were saying it's HIPAA stuff. It didn't sound satisfying to me. I said I could get their age. I don't need their name. Just give me the guy was 89. He died in a nursing home.
So, yeah, you know, you're right. And so here's the breakdown. And I'm going to show you this document. I don't know if you can, you know, you're making this out. But this is a document that I get from the county that I get that gives me age breakdown. But it's still a wide range. So right now, total cases from those aged 0 to 17, total cases 59. So and then it goes 18 to 40, then 41, 65. Than over 65. Now, the reason they do that, frankly, Adam, is that they the information would be too large to digest and to send out on a daily basis. It's just too much information. And frankly, they don't have a lot of this information yet because when you're in a rapid fire scene like this where you're triaging patients and you're putting patients in care and then you've got to coordinate the morgue and all these other things, a lot of that data is not readily available to do on a daily basis. You're right. This is not a HIPAA situation. It's really more of the ability to collect the information situation.
Well, what about, let's say in the mortality page you have, if you have one that, that has the deaths. And so 2 weeks ago when they said three people had died in Orange County, over 60 or over 65, I was like, why can't we get the ages of those three peoples? And do they do it now? Does it take a while for the data to come in? Like the three people that died 2 weeks ago, would we have their ages now?
Yes. And in the beginning, when there were only one, two, or three patients, what they were afraid of, there's also a reason why you don't find out the hospital that they're in. That becomes a privacy issue because it's easy to track down and trace that information. I know that the LA County Fire Department, for instance, had cases in one of their fire stations where they only had two firefighters that were infected, but they didn't want to say where and how because they didn't want people showing them up the doorstep of the fire station or their homes. And so, yes, there are privacy concern issues. So they just err on the side of caution. But today is sort of a pivotal point for them because they are starting to give us more detailed information. We have been assured by the County Health Department today on the public call that they are going to start giving us those breakouts in the next week or so. So we will start getting that information pretty quickly.
Do you have a mortality, you know, 0 to 18, 18 to 34, you know, how many in each group breakdown?
Not in each group. Overall in the county, based on the new stats, the mortality rate just inched up to
2.4%. 2.4%.
It's slightly higher than the national average. But according to officials, it's pretty much on par given the size of our county and the size of the population.
So 2.4% is mortality versus the people have contracted it that we're aware of.
Right.
So we have almost 10,000 people who've contracted it and about 200 who are fatalities.
Right. So if you look at total cases overall, you know, we're at 7,000 total positive cases, but looking at the total that had been treated in and out of the hospital and had been tested is like 30 or 40,000 people have already been tested. And then 20,000 of those have been negative. So when you put that all together, the mortality rate is based strictly on those who have died versus those in the county. It's a straight county population versus those who've died.
How are we doing with testing? And there's a lot of speculation that a lot of people are walking around with this and are unaware of it. And I guess the only way to really ascertain that answer is to randomly round up 5,000 people and test them and see what who don't have symptoms and see what the positivity is on that. Is there any thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, and that's why they're asking everyone to stay home as a precaution because they don't know and there is no way to go around and start randomly testing people like that. And that's why they don't want to take a chance on anyone who might appear to be asymptomatic out there walking around, touching stuff or coughing on people or sneezing on people. That's why that they want everyone to stay home. And that's why the doctor said yesterday, she doesn't even want anyone grocery shopping this week. That's how serious it has become. So other than showing symptoms, no one really knows if they're a carrier or not. And that's why she was talking about, and I'm talking about Dr. Barbara Ferrer, the county health director. That's why she said in the very beginning, don't get a test unless you have symptoms, because you could test negative today and be positive tomorrow. So that's why it's so important to just stay home.
But shouldn't we figure out a way to test a group of people just to see if we can get an understanding of this theory about people being positive but not having symptoms?
But then again, we could, but you would have to do such a just the statistics alone would be kind of untenable, because you would have to get these large groups of people all together to do this. And even still, you wouldn't have a very accurate count or any kind of static or any kind of stats that would show you what you need, because again, you would have to just get a bunch of, like, if everyone here in my building right now, if we got all 10 of us together and started testing it, we're all negative, but tomorrow half of us could be positive.
Right. But I still think I could start to paint some sort of picture that if you said we took random 100 people from Orange County and a random 100 people from Riverside and a random 100 people from Los Angeles County, and we tested them, if it was a super high percentage who were asymptomatic, mm-hmm. if a super high percentage of that 300 people came back as positive, I'd go, wow, I think this thing is something that people have and they're asymptomatic, versus another outcome is what I'm saying. I mean, it would never be proof positive. It would just.
Right. So would this just make you feel better?
Well, I think if you said, let's put it to you this way. You think your kid has a problem with lice at school, right? And my kid's got a class of 30 kids and they go from one class to the next class. They have five classes with 30 kids in it. If you said to me, would you like them to take five kids or 10 kids from their homeroom class and just test them for lice, I'd go, yeah, I think I could get a picture or an idea. It wouldn't be proof positive. It would give you some better clarity on whether there was a lice situation in their school. You wouldn't be able to test all the kids. You would only be able to get a small group. But I think some information would help you construct some answers.
Okay, so based on that theorem, so if you were to test those 10 people I was just talking about and they all came up negative, but then 2 or 3 days later, four of them became symptomatic and they had already been around spreading disease, that sort of negates that.
Well, I'm not telling them to rub heads together lice. No, that's
but if you're
the difference.
Being told, but if you're being told, yeah, I understand. But if you're being told all of a sudden that group of 10 people, no one's positive in this group. So you guys are good. You're good to go. But then come to find out the symptoms have been, you know, they're dormant, just like cancer cells or anything else. This virus is dormant and we don't know when it's going to surface. If you even have the virus to begin with, or what it's going to trigger, or when the symptoms are going to trigger. That's why they want everyone to stay home for that
15
days.
I'm not arguing with stay home. I'm just arguing for information.
For a snapshot.
I don't want people to change their behavior.
I feel like in Adam's proposed testing, the people wouldn't even know the results. Like, it would simply be for demographic study, like just so we knew what we were dealing with. Is that sort of what you're saying?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people saying
it wouldn't be like you're good, go on your way. It would be like, oh, this is
no,
and
it wouldn't be
data.
It wouldn't be let's open Disneyland either. I just like I keep hearing people saying half the population has this and doesn't know it, and then I hear they know they don't, and I'm thinking, I'd like to know this one.
I think basically, Adam, what we should do is have Arbitron do this, because it sounds like something Arbitron should handle. So let's do the Arbitron. No, seriously, I understand what you're saying. And so here's the really frustrating part about this. You got a lot of scientists sitting in a room with a lot of charts, graphs, and maps. And they're all still trying to do all this statistical sort of modeling. And they're trying to put this together. It's like, well, if we've got this, you know, 10,000 people that have tested positive in a population of 3 million. And then that means that we've got this X amount and this percentage, and the odds are it's going to, and in at the rate of spread and at the rate that the positive cases are being detected, that's how they're coming up with all of this. And that, I think, might also help. I don't know if that'll help satisfy you a bit, but they're using this based on statistical modeling that seems to be working and has worked in other outbreaks.
Well, we're going to find out more as it goes. You know, it's one of those things where I don't think there's any direction where you can go, this is positively going to work and that's positively not going to work. For me, it's just whatever information, the more information I can get, the better. Going full circle to having three people die above the age of 60 is fine. Having three people die, one's 81, one's 84, and the other's 89, is better. It's more specific to me. That the specificity is what I'm looking for.
Right.
Some of that.
And we're going to get that. It's going to take a while. Here's the thing. You know, you remember the 17-year-old boy from Lancaster who died just a few weeks ago. Yep. And initially they said he died from coronavirus. Well, then they backtracked that and said, well, you know, we didn't really test him until after he passed away. So the test was done post-mortem. But they're like, okay, well, what was his cause of death? And then they said, well, his case is more complex. So now I've been on the phone with the CDC in Atlanta because they turned the case over to them. So everyone's got this kind of a, I want to say, morbid curiosity, because this is a 17-year-old boy, presumably who's healthy. But Dr. Fauci from the federal government said that you're going to have what he calls these one-offs. You're going to have these people that have no symptoms, seemingly perfectly healthy, and they're just going to die from this because that's the way human nature is.
Yeah.
But to your point, Adam, we are going to get more details about this. It will eventually come in the form of a breakdown. They're just trying to compile as much information, because we're also very needy in the media and we're demanding a lot of this. So in order for them to keep up with our demand, they're having to do this in the most expeditious way possible.
Steve, thanks for your input. And if you don't mind, could you please do your lockout?
No, I'm sorry. I can't. I'm not like a monkey. I don't do that stuff on cue.
Oh, yes, you do.
By the way, I've never got a monkey to do a lockout.
Oh, wait.
I do a thousand times.
Actually, that doesn't surprise me. Doesn't Conway always try to get you to do it and you always refuse?
Right. And Gina, sweetheart, I have never done that lockout in front of you. Have I?
Really? What?
I've pressed that button a thousand times.
Oh, no, but I've never done it in front of you.
No, that's true. Adam, would you like me to do it for Steve?
No, wait a minute. No, we did. You and I were in the truck down at on Tranny Alley.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the official name. That was a long time ago.
Remember that? Right. Yeah, you did see me file from down there. That's right.
I did. Right. I shadowed you.
Are you telling me Steve Gregory, KFI, something that's being fired from a sound machine? It's not actually Steve? No,
just when he's doing his full 30-second report, he's doing his own, you know, he's giving these stats from the government, and then he does his lockout. But I'm firing the button that's doing Steve's report.
Oh.
I don't think that's proprietary information that I'm pushing a button with Steve's report.
It's all pre-recorded.
Yeah.
Steve, I get if you're talking to, let's see, talking to Bruce Buffer and you want him to yell,
Let's get ready to rumble.
That's an issue because that's copywritten. But I don't know if Steve Gregory KFI is copywritten. And by the way, if it was, you'd be the only guy who could say it. So I don't think there's any reason to get Gergis involved with this. I think you just give the audience a thrill with your lockout, which, and who knows, this could go nationwide. You know what I mean? This could
international podcast.
Yeah, it's a global podcast.
This could be your Where's the Beef or Here Come the Judge.
Sorry, Adam.
I hate myself.
Wow, he is not a groundling.
Wow.
Playing hardball.
No, all I right. just, it's just something, I'm not a TV guy. There's a reason I'm in radio. I don't do this stuff on camera.
I will then lock it out for you. Thanks, Steve.
You got it, Adam. Anytime.
See you in a couple hours.
Bye, Gina.
Bye.
All right, let's see if I can work.
He's a hard-boiled newsman.
I'm Steve Gregory, and I'm passive-aggressive. All right, that's my lockout.
He cited the camera thing as a sticking point. He could have just slid out of frame.
Well, Conway's asked him to do it 1,000 times, and he's always turned him down. That's one of his things.
One of his things.
I mean, I've seen it before. I totally forgot. Conway's always asking him to do it. He won't do it.
All right. Let me hit Omaha Steaks, and we'll crank up some news up in here. Omaha Steaks, stuck in. Well, stock up. How about get some Omaha Steaks? They deliver the world's best steaks and a huge variety of family favorites without leaving home. And right now, they got limited time. You can stock up. Well, they're just saying, don't go to the supermarket, right? Well, where are you going to get your food? How about Omaha Steaks, everyone? They got a stock up sale just for our listeners. Go to omahasteaks.com. Enter Adam into the search bar to unlock a unique savings for my listeners. Guaranteed quality, safety with every order. Stock up, and you don't need to remember to get all the food and all the good solid protein you get at Omaha Steaks. A variety of ready-to-ship boxes available now. Enter Adam at the search bar and save over 50% on your order. Get free shipping on orders above $69. And it is Omaha Steaks, right, Dawson?
We love Omaha Steaks and our fans so much that we're giving away 5 boxes to the first 5 people who tweet us in a picture of their Omaha Steaks receipt using the code Adam, so that you can gift a box to your family or friends completely on us. That's right. Tweet us a picture of your receipt using the code Adam, and the Ace Man himself will send your loved ones an entire box of premium Omaha Steaks. Again, never been a better time to stock up on Omaha Steaks. Stock up sale is going on right now with ready-to-ship packages. Save 50% or more. Plus, free shipping on orders of $69 or more. That's omahasteaks.com. Type Adam in the search bar.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back. We'll do the news with Gina and Paul Bryan right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drug meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So Major League Baseball has confirmed that it's considering playing the season at one neutral location and with no fans in attendance. There had been reports that the commissioner is considering starting the season in May and playing all the games at various fields around Arizona, but looks like they're still trying to work it out. But many are getting on this no crowd train.
The no crowd train.
Seems that's the one from Chowchilla to Bakersfield.
Yeah, that's our super train, not the one in New Delhi.
Right.
The thing about baseball, I'm trying to think of what sport suffers the most. Now, the sport of baseball itself doesn't suffer as much as, I don't know, maybe basketball or football does, minus the crowd. But the reason to go to a baseball game is to drink some beers and eat some hot dogs. And it's a little less about the game, especially when it's game 41.
Right.
It's an excuse to get out of the house, to get out of work on a Friday, to take your kid out there to eat some peanuts and carnation frozen malt with a wooden paddle.
Yes.
It cracks every time. Like, it's that experience. Whereas, I guess you'd think of it this way. If you think about going to a basketball game, the first thing you think about is, like, who's playing? Who's on that team? Who are the Lakers going to play? They're playing some scrub team that's, 20 games under 500, or are they playing a tough team? So you do that. And then you're like, who's on the court? Who's playing? Is LeBron in that game? Is he injured? Blah, blah, blah. And at a certain, then you might think about parking and a few other things, but at a certain point, you'd get to food, But when you think baseball, the first thought you have is like, what am I going to eat?
Yep. Yeah.
How many beers?
Ballpark snacks.
When do we get locked out? Does beer line get locked off in the 7th inning? When's the beer line?
Can't be too safe.
Right. Should I bring a flask? So you start thinking about food immediately, which means you're there for kind of the communal experience of eating some hot dogs and drinking some beer in a judgment-free environment on a weekday at noon. So it's going to hurt the fans, this one. I don't know that it'll affect the play, but it's definitely not going to be fun for the fans.
That's a good point. And we talked to Dr. Ray Kasheri every night, and he said if doctors got to choose which sport got to go back to work first, he would absolutely pick baseball, because there's almost zero interaction with the crowd. So you're not sitting courtside, you're not being sweat on, you are separated by barriers and nets, and it would probably be the safest to go back to.
Maybe some good will come out of this, and it'll put an end to the weird incessant spitting that these guys do. And it's like the worst is when they're just standing at home plate, and they're like,
could they ever stop?
They just spit and they spit and they spit, and some of them are chewing seed and spitting, and others are just doing this weird licking thing, where like, and it's like, please stop spitting all over the place all the time. Maybe we should mask on these guys, Brian.
I don't know if it's still a thing, but it used to be a thing. Chris can look it up. There used to be a lot of players who would do chewing tobacco mixed with bubble gum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I don't know if that would mask the flavor. I don't know why. I really can't imagine.
I just can't believe there's a sport where you can eat while you're playing.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
A lot of them back in the day could smoke while they're playing. I mean, they'd sit on the bench and smoke. The skippers would smoke. These guys, I think they did away with the tobacco, but they replaced it with seeds.
Yeah, the sunflower seeds.
And they end up chewing it like it's like what vaping is to smoking a cigarette. It's like, well, it's not cigarettes, but you're still doing something.
Yeah.
And then there's a weird spitting, and the spitting is like through the center of the teeth. I don't know what it is.
Gleeking?
It's like it, but I don't know why, other than you're bored, but let's stop that.
You should be bored.
I just got a text from the Laugh Factory saying, do you want to do stand-up? And I said, it said, do you want to do stand-up? There's only 4 people in the room. So
is it virtual? Would it be like broadcast over the internet?
Or those are 4 super important people.
Well, they really got to work out. Yeah, they really got to work out their material.
The guy that books the Tonight Show. There's a guy from Kimmel, the guy from Conan, the guy from Fallon. Those are only 4 guys.
Make them laugh.
He loves comedy.
That's right. So they said, you want to come out and do stand-up? There's only 4 people in the room. And I said, okay. How does it work? And they said, well, they stream it, you know, obviously they'll stream it. And I thought, okay, that'll be an experience. And then I said, what time? And they said,
Natalia swatted the phone out of your hands.
they said, yeah, she came around the corner like Charles Haley and just did a full, went full Lawrence Taylor tomahawk on my blind side.
Strip sack.
You have to hire like a retired weak side tackle, the blind side guy, or
Tony Pacelli.
Yeah, he's got to keep an eye out. So he said they broadcast it, I guess, and it's like at 2 to 4 in the afternoon. So imagine doing stand-up at 3 o'clock in an empty club.
Whew.
You know, seems like the opposite of everything you'd like to do. But I said, yeah, I'll give it a shot. So we'll work that out.
When is that?
I don't know. I got the text moments before we heated up and went on the air. So I just sort of sent him back and said, you know, he said what day, and I just said I'll have to figure it out. So we'll have to figure it out.
Talk about events that are tough without a crowd. I think we found the ultimate
tough crowd
example. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna. I don't think you'd want to do material. I think you'd want to keep it to Corona, right? I think if you could. I mean, it's a tall order doing 20 minutes of new material, but I think we could do it.
Yeah, but you know, you have all the books to draw from. Mm-hmm. And when you're sort of pontificating and it's funny, that seems like that would be a great thing to do for this type of thing.
Gina's right. This is a great opportunity to break that rule. Don't tell stories, tell jokes. Fucking tell stories, man.
Yeah.
Tell all stories you want.
I shall. Sorry.
All right. Well, Tylenol is quickly disappearing from store shelves everywhere because there's this debate going on within, you know, just society, some of the medical community, that you're not, or are you not supposed to be using ibuprofen for COVID-19 symptoms? That's sort of a hot debate right now. So everybody's buying Tylenol because some in the medical field say there's something about ibuprofen and Advil that's complicating these COVID-19 symptoms. And there's other doctors saying it makes no difference. But now that the debate's out there, the question has been raised. People are supermarket sweeping the acetaminophen off the shelves, the Tylenol.
Mm-hmm. All my years, I still don't know the difference between which is what and what the generic is for that. Never figured it out.
Acetaminophen is Tylenol. Ibuprofen is Advil. And one is Advil is an anti-inflammatory. And the other one's just a fever reducer, as far as I understand.
Yeah, I have no relationship with that world.
I have a Jewish mother. Of course I know
this. Touched it. I don't know what to do. But it'd be nice if people didn't hoard, and I get the impulse. It's a human impulse. So there's a lot of human impulses, and what we're basically deciding to do is to go against your human impulses, which is, I'm looking at a thing, says my connection's unstable, but here it goes. I have an impulse to go to the beach, and now that it's empty, I really have an impulse to go to the beach. But we should deny that part where you get out of your car and go stand on the beach, because we're asking people not to do that. But that's an impulse. And, you know, look at the impulse to touch your face. Everyone's wrestling with, you don't know what it's your impulse. Your impulse to touch face. We're asking you to stop doing it. Your impulse is to get all the food and all the medicine and all the toilet paper, and it's all for you.
It's ingrained. We're hunter-gatherers. You can get enough buffalo for the winter. You know what I mean?
Right.
For 18 winters.
So these things kind of bring out the worst impulse in many human beings. And so what we're asking, because essentially that's what a society is. A society is a whole bunch of people ignoring a lot of their impulses. You know what I mean?
You're right.
Your impulse is that parking space is mine. Yeah, but there's someone who was waiting for it before.
And it's not yours.
It's not yours. So give up on your impulses.
Well, and now, thank God, these grocery stores and you know, pharmacies are finally having to regulate us for us, because we can't be trusted. And it's a much more pleasant shopping experience. You go in and there are things there and people are moving slowly and they're not in attack mode, because it says one item per customer or two items per customer. So you don't have to start, you know, freaking out and elbowing people out of the way. You're only allowed to take two and move on. And that's what apparently we can't be trusted to do it another way.
Yeah, well, we've proven that under great conditions, we can still be bad. And under stressful conditions, it's a full fist fight in the electronics aisle of the Costco during Black Wednesday or whatever it is.
Like Black Friday.
We can get ourselves into a lather pretty quickly.
Yeah,
We can spin out pretty fast.
You are right about that. Oh, speaking of all these new rules, and, you know, Steve kind of went over the numbers, so we'll skip those. But New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has doubled the maximum fine for breaking social distancing. So now in New York, if you're caught gathering or doing things you're not supposed to be doing, you can get a $1,000 fine.
I hear he's looking for that iconic couple, the one guy who was the sailor, the other gal that may have been a nurse. They were kissing in Times Square. I hear he's looking and seeing if they're still alive so he can go back and retroactively find them.
Make an example out of them.
Yeah, that's right. An example.
Everybody in that whole damn Times Square old Anxine group, because I think that was New Year's. And of course, Chris Cuomo still doing the show from the basement in his best hoodie.
Sorry, you were choppy. I think that picture's like they announced the Japanese surrendered or whatever.
Oh, I thought it was New
VJ
Year's.
Day. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. A Louisiana pastor. Well, then I'm glad you didn't hear it. A Louisiana pastor charged for violating coronavirus bans held a Palm Sunday service with 1,220 congregants. I was just looking at one of the quotes from one of the parishioners that said, like, I'm protected because I'm protected by the blood of Jesus, which seems a little not really what Jesus was going for in terms of looking out for your neighbor.
Also, he could have had the coronavirus. We don't know.
That's true. He cured the sick.
Yeah, he's working with those lepers and whores. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's a pretty dirty community. Also, as an ex-carpenter, I can tell you those guys aren't Purell based at all.
No.
So strike three. So God knows what was in his blood is what I'm saying. I'm going to use her argument and talk about Jesus's tainted blood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Careful what you wish for.
That's exactly right.
Careful what you pray for.
That's right.
Dana White might be doing something kind of crazy. You know, we talked about holding all these events and sporting events with no audience. He's going one further. He may have found a way to bring UFC back. He tells TMZ Sports he's closing a deal to host the fights on a private island. He says he's already locked up the location for UFC 249, which starts April 18th, but he's keeping it a secret. He'll run fights there every week for 2 months. Afterwards, he'll move the octagon to the undisclosed island, where he'll fly international fighters and on private jets. White says that every person involved in the fights, from production staff to fighters, will be screened thoroughly. They have to have, you know, I think below a 100.4 temp. And Joe Rogan should still be available to call the fights despite him having health concerns. So it's going to a private island, apparently.
100.4. People run that hot, huh?
I guess that seems to be the the marker.
So here's all I want to say. I grew up, there's a lot of professional wrestling going on, and there's always this thing which is loser leaves town. Except for everyone was from out of town. So it really wasn't that tough. You know what I mean?
I'm leaving anyway.
Yeah. If I go to Wisconsin to do stand-up, they're like, okay, Corolla, but if you're not funny, you're leaving town. I'd be like, yeah, I am. Can Southwest, do. Tomorrow, 7 a.m.
Either way. So,
first flight out.
Leaving town, especially when you're in a shitty town where they're having these podunk kind of wrestling competitions, you know, these smokers, not much of a threat. But how about this? Loser stays on the island. You can't go back home. You got a year on that island.
Right now, that resident. Should be the winner.
Well, let's up the ante is what I'm saying. What I'm saying is each guy gets paid. You know what I mean? You're doing, let's just say, big prize fight. For the sake of argument, Khabib's getting $10 million. Tony Ferguson's getting $10 million. You win, you get the belt and $10 million. You get back on the private jet and you go back to wherever you're from. You lose, you get the $10 million, no belt, get back on the private jet and go back. It doesn't seem like enough for losing.
Right.
Good point.
I'm saying, I want you to stay on that island. You've got to think about what you did wrong.
Real stakes.
You could do a full Rocky montage where you found a black friend to run along the beach with in slow motion and then hug in the waist deep in water.
Yeah. Sure. Awkward hug, yeah.
Little castaway style. You don't know when someone's coming back for you.
Full castaway.
Yeah.
We'll have boxes float up with skates in them and volleyballs and stuff like that. But you got to live off the fat of the land. Then we spin off this whole show like Ultimate Fighter. This is Ultimate Survivor.
Yeah.
Every week, once we get the critical mass, once we get 20 guys on this island, all living off the land, growing out beards, emaciated, missing their loved ones and
naked
children.
And afraid.
Yeah. Naked and afraid. Then they go back in the octagon and we have elimination fights to see who can fight their way off that island.
Who really wants to get home?
Who really wants it?
This is fantastic. I
watch the
everything
shit out of that.
That's great.
I would watch the shit out of that.
That'd be fantastic. The only reality show I watched.
It would be great. You'd have to fight your way off the island.
God, what Jeff
Probst is waving a plane ticket. It's like, who wants it?
He's standing there with his choker, standing on the dock. He's got a ticket there. Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to come up with titles as fast as I can. You got any? The only, you guys wouldn't know this. There's a musical called Once on This Island. Punch on This Island. I don't know, we got to think of something. You got to pitch it.
There's a dandy of a film called Cutthroat Island.
Okay.
At the time, the biggest bomb of all time.
That's right. Gina Davis, I believe.
Yep. Brenny Harlan.
And Matthew Modine.
Matthew Modine.
Yeah. So obviously Island is good. You know what I mean? I mean, you end with Island. In front of it, it's Elimination Island, Cutthroat Island, Fistfight Island, you know, Combat Island, you know, that kind of stuff. We work out. But nobody's getting, no losers getting off that island. No.
I like it. This just in from Gary, because you said Khabib. Just FYI, it's now Ferguson and Gaethje.
Oh, yeah. Khabib's not leaving Russia or whatever. First off, there's footage of him at age 9 wrestling a bear. He doesn't have delicate sensibilities. He grew up in a village where he was like encouraged to wrestle wildlife. They're literally...
Namurga Madoff.
Yes, that's him. He comes from a place where, as a lad, he was encouraged to wrestle bears.
Yeah.
I swear to God, there's footage of that. I don't know why this guy can't go on an island with a rigorous screening process and fight for megabucks.
One of the limitations of my setup here is I can't listen to drops ahead of time, but I think this would make a good tagline for a reality show.
I'll UFC you in hell, dude.
Oh, yes.
I'll UFC you in hell. Here's Khabib wrestling with a full-grown bear at age 9.
That's good.
On a trash and dirt-filled floor. Nobody is worried about germs in this scenario. He is on a patch of littered dirt and something that ends with Stan, and he's wrestling a bear.
That is so adorable and terrifying at the same time.
He's age 6.
Murder Madoff.
Yeah, so let's not worry about him being a germaphobe. That guy's immune system, first off, he's had other men's blood in his mouth since he was 9. You understand? Like when you're beating on some guy and you open a cut over that guy's face, like, I mean, you open a guy up big time with, you know, guy's going to take 28 stitches above his brow, and that guy's above you. And he's got you, you know, he's got full guard or position on you. That guy's just dripping blood onto you. Just those guys get covered in each other's blood and sweat. Think about what his immune system is like. Every
day. He has the immune system of 100 men.
Every day he is wrestling with some other sweaty guy who's mashing his blood and sweat. Yep. And it's getting into his eyes. They don't wrestle with masks on or goggles or anything. There is shit going in that guy's face all day long. Every mucous membrane he owns has been violated. And he was raped by a bear.
You should be his hype man.
I think you are.
My Adam point King. Is that guy couldn't get anything from anybody. Now get on a fucking plane and go to an island. There's something going on. It's Russia. We don't get any more info. There's something up. Why wouldn't that guy fight? Everyone's being tested. And again, you're in a sport where the guys you deal with are, it's a nonstop germ fest. Every one of those gyms. Yes, Gina. I mean, bald. Sorry.
This is better than Kyle Reese's speech in Terminator. Can't be reasoned with. He can't be bargained with.
He was raped by a bear at age 6.
He doesn't feel pity or remorse.
That is what I'm saying. So Khabib, get on that plane. Because the whole thing is, Khabib is the guy. Ferguson is a guy, but the guy is Khabib, right? And so when you get rid of Khabib and you replace him with Gaethje, now you have a guy and a guy. And the thing about a big fight, go back to Muhammad Ali. Well, it would be Muhammad Ali fights guy you've never heard of, but it was still a Muhammad Ali fight. And so there was a chance that he could get beat by this guy you never heard of, and thus you'd tune in. These guys, Ferguson and Gaethje, are great fighters, but they're not what you've heard of, household namey stuff. So you need one of those guys. So you remove the guy we kind of want to see get beat. The Khabib is relatively unbeatable. And as I've said, when he's not being raped by a bear, he's jumping barefoot into the stands and attacking family members of other fighters. So this guy's not germ. He's not germ averse. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Hopefully more will come out about that, because I think you're right. There's something going on there. J.K. Rowling. She's fully recovered after experiencing all the symptoms of coronavirus, even though she'd never been officially tested. Along with that news, she tweeted out this video of a doctor explaining how to relieve respiratory symptoms. She said the technique helped her a lot. I know there's lots of crazy videos going around, and one's telling you to stick hair dryers up your nose, and doctors are saying, please don't do that. But this is one that she tweeted out. I believe he's a nurse, and it's just a couple of breathing exercises either to prepare you for or when you already have these symptoms.
And I want you guys to start doing this if you have the infection right from the beginning. If you want to do it before you even pick up the infection, good idea. Anyway, the way it will work is you will take 5 deep breaths in, and each time you'll hold your breath for 5 seconds. On the 6th deep breath, you will take it in and you will do a big cough and covering your mouth. Okay, you will do this twice, and then you will then lay flat on your bed with a pillow in front of you, taking slightly deeper breaths for the next 10 minutes.
Hold
because
on.
You've got to understand.
Hold it. This is Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh, no, I was fooled.
And you bite the pillow.
Oh, you didn't let me finish.
And then you're penetrated by a mop handle. Now, film this and put it up on the Zoom network.
With hashtag.
Okay. Hashtag. Yeah. All right.
So basically what he's saying, because I had to watch it a couple times to make sure. Two times you do two reps of this, five deep breaths or six or whatever. On the last one, you cough out as much as you can, and then you lay on your stomach, not on your back, because he said people don't really realize this. A lot of your lung capacity is in your back. So you lay on your stomach and do this again with deeper breaths just to push out whatever, I don't know. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but to push out whatever gunk or shit lies at, you know, dormant at the bottom of your lungs. But that's what J.K. Rowling retweeted. She said it helped her. So you never know. And it's a lot less dangerous than sticking a hairdryer up your nose, which was also going around.
Weren't we just angry at her for something? She defended some person.
Oh, God forbid.
Yeah, she was in the news weeks ago or something, right before this whole thing started, it feels like.
Then she's a winner of COVID-19.
She's a winner.
There's a trans... Oh, she just missed it because she said something about some transgender thing, and then she got taken out to the woodshed and beaten by society, and then this thing cropped up. But maybe now that she got it, she gets some sympathy points. I'm trying to... she's under fire for defending a woman who lost her job after saying trans women aren't real women. That was... that's what she got initially beaten for, but I think she just missed her window of winner of COVID-19, right. Although we did kind of forget about it.
That's ultimately a win in her book.
Yeah, it happened sort of outside the window of the virus. But again, there are winners that happen within the window of the virus, and then there are winners who we got inundated with so much information, we just flushed out everything that happened a month before.
That's right.
All right, Gina, you do one more. I'm going to look for something that's at my feet. So
you got it. Tori Spelling has announced she's doing a virtual meet and greet for 20 fans. Pretty exciting. The only catch is...
She has 20 fans?
Well, hopefully for her, $95 a pop. Not surprisingly, Spelling's venture caused an almost immediate backlash on social media, with followers angry about the steep price during a time when so many don't have jobs and they're struggling and there's a pandemic. The reality star and husband, Dean McDermott, have been plagued by their own financial issues for years. She's been sued twice by American Express for failing to pay her balances of $38,000 on one, $88,000 on the other. And in 2017, the couple was sued by City National Bank for failing to make monthly payments on a loan. They have five kids, 13, 11, 8, 7, and 3. So, you know, while everyone's jumping on Cameo, I'm on Cameo, by the way, or anything, and, you know, doing it this way, she wanted to do a special meet and greet and charge almost $100 a pop.
Attention,
I don't know if that's
Tori Spelling. Attention, Tori Spelling's disgruntled fans. Gina's available for a much cheaper.
Oh, for a song. I love
doing
it. I
got things. I got thoughts. Sorry, I'm looking for a spot. I got a pile of paper here and it dropped off. But anyway, Tori Spelling, first off, her dad was unreasonably rich.
But
insanely rich. And I mean, he had a house in Holmby Hills that was across the street from the Playboy Mansion that had to be, I mean, when it sold, it had to sell for $57 million. I mean, if it sold for a penny. Then there's Candy Spelling, the mom. Yeah. And Candy Spelling is nuts and vindictive and whatever, and took the money and got herself a luxury condominium on Wilshire Boulevard and put all the money into that. And I guess it's cut off Tori. Candy is Tori's biological mom, I believe.
Yeah.
You could see this kind of shit happening with the trophy wife who came along when the the biological daughter was 17 and a half and a chick who showed up was 31, and there was a lot of daggers and arguments and never got on. And then the dad passed away and now she's got all the money and blah, blah, blah. But I do believe she's the biological mom. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what happened with those two, but you know, my mom doesn't have a pot to piss in, so I can talk all the shit I want. if she had a $55 million house and dad died, I'd be kissing some ass. I don't know where Tori is. I don't know how this rift came about, but there's no way the family doesn't have money. I mean, even in syndication with all the Love Boats and all that.
I don't do an O.
It's so he generated so much. Aaron Spelling generated so much money over the course of his career, and those checks still have to be piling in. So what happened? And then what about the brother?
Yeah. Well, the first two things that come up, Showbiz Cheat Sheet and Mercury News, both say Tori inherited just $800,000 from her dad. And this is both of the kids just inherited tiny fraction of their dad's $500 million fortune.
Well, of course it would go to Candy Spelling. Right?
Right.
Because
right.
She was still alive.
Right. But, he could have set up a trust for his kids.
Well, yeah, he could have. Well, but here's the thing. So what's up with Candy? I mean, so if Candy has more money than God and she's 77 and a half, what's going on?
And here's it.
You know who would probably know this is AJ Benza.
That's true.
He knows Tori pretty well.
He doesn't like telling tales out of school, though, Brian.
Maybe just this once we can squeeze some info from him.
He plays it pretty close.
I know. What if you just called him like as though you're just calling for a friend, but like it's actually being recorded? Like, you know, he didn't know it was being broadcast. Maybe he'd come forth.
We'll see if we can coax him out of his shell. Sorry. Yes, we should talk to AJ. Make a note, Max Zapata. How old is Tori? How old is Candy? How much is Candy worth? And why can't Candy kick something down to Tori? Not that Tori deserves it, but what is the rift? I think there's a rift there.
Yeah,
I'm looking at a very clickbait headline from 2014 that says, quote, Tori can drop $60,000 in one store. Candy Spelling reveals why her daughter only received $800,000 of her famous father's inheritance. But I'm not really seeing an answer, so that's why I'm saying it's a little clickbaity. But I am seeing, as I scan, this says Tori 41, and this was in 2014.
She's 46 now, and Candy's 74.
She's openly discussed her efforts to tighten her belt in recent months, despite reporting having celebrated daughter Stella's sixth birthday, $6,000. I mean, this can't come down to Candy's belt tightening.
No.
Let's see.
All right. Well, either way, boo-hoo. Wait a minute. How would that sound if, Grad, don't think of her name.
Wah. You know how many people are struggling right now, Adam. There are real problems out there. I can't worry about Candy and Tori Spelling and which one got almost $1 million and which one got almost $1 billion. I got to focus on my kids. I got to focus on this pandemic. I got to focus on my faith.
Hey, Nancy Grace, Nancy Grant, Tori Spelling and Candy Spelling are alive. Aaron Spelling, not alive. You know, he seemed in pretty good health, even for an older man. And all of a sudden, he just comes up dead, and this multi-million-dollar fortune goes right to Candy. And nobody ever looked into it. I haven't seen an autopsy report. Have you?
Adam, I'm so glad you said that. You have opened Pandora's box. I have been screaming this to the high heavens for years. What did happen to Aaron Spelling, and why is Candy so happy about it?
He was a spry 89.
He had the world at his fingertips. He had his whole life ahead of him. Everybody knew it. Everybody had designs on him. Everybody wanted their claws in him. He was doing just fine, and all of a sudden, he mysteriously disappears. What? I'd like to see that autopsy. I'd like to see that coroner's report.
He was cut down in his prime. And
I couldn't agree more.
Here's more proof. He was murdered. He was planning on doing other things.
That's right. That's absolutely right. He had business meetings. I have the paperwork. I have the receipts. I have the phone calls that he was taking other meetings to do other projects. So you tell me, is this foul play or is this foul play?
He had a project, I happen to know, that was already in pre-production called Love Shuttle. It was the love boat in outer space.
Oh. And it was going to make
celebrities and put them on a shuttle.
That's right.
There was a character that was sort of like Elon Musk. I don't want to say too much about it, but he was working on this stuff. He was a spry 89, cut down in his prime. And again, I'm not saying there isn't an autopsy report. I'm saying I've never seen it. Have you?
No, I haven't. And you know, I bet you dollars to donuts, Adam, if you were to look out onto the backyard of that beloved Mr. Spellin, you would just see one swinging back and forth with nobody on it. That's where Aaron was taken, and I intend to prove it.
Yeah, it's a 127-year-old grandmother, or mother, I should say, nightmare is what it is.
That's
to have your 89-year-old boy cut down in his prime that way. I say we exhume the body. Yes. I say we go to Forest Lawn and we look into this, because
I think you know, and I think I know, that this was foul play. And I, Nancy Grace, am devoting a brand new show, prime time, on the HLN Network to what the hell happened to Aaron Spelling, Friday nights at 9 p.m.
We'll be watching. All right, Gina, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, last but not least, Bet Online. No NBA, no NHL, no MLB. Although MLB may get started up and might have something to bet on. Well, but there's all kinds of other sports going on out there. Stuff you never would have thought of putting a wager on, but now you can. Bet Online has all the action, and you can find it right at Bet Online. This is our exclusive partner at Podcast One, Bet Online. Take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account with the promo code PODCAST1 for a 100% sign-up bonus, and it's easy to do. You just visit betonline.ag. Don't forget, use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 100% sign-up bonus. Do it today at BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. That's betonline.ag. All right. You may go to adamcarolla.com and find my book over there, or t-shirts or swag or whatever, and pre-order I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. We'll have the audiobook ready for pre-order and the book ready for pre-order as well. Also, you can go to chassis, chassy.com, and check out all the movies we have procured for you there. Get a Blu-ray or whatever. We'll sign it, send it out to you. And then you can check out our YouTube station. Watch the show. Watch the stand-up there, youtube.com/Adam Carolla. So thank you for that. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Steve Gregory and Gina Grad and Bald Brian. Say mahalo.